This is fun! The FU Network.
For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. For he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say on the bus.
Dr. David Banner, physician, scientist, searching for a way to tap into the hidden strengths that all humans have. Then an accidental overdose of gamma radiation alters his body chemistry. And now when David Banner grows angry or outraged, a startling metamorphosis occurs. The creature is driven by rage and pursued by an investigative reporter.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Many people of a certain vintage will recall that audio clip is coming from the 1970s TV series version of The Incredible Hulk, but it contains a universal truth. Nobody likes anyone when they're angry. But for men, anger seems to be the factory default setting when facing difficult circumstances or conversations. And today we're going to take a deep dive into men and anger. I'm your host, Stephen Kersner. On our panel today, Paul Doroshenko, QC, an experienced criminal defense lawyer with a practice devoted to criminal defense and drunk driving law in BC. His main goal is ensuring that his clients avoid a criminal record. Welcome, Paul.
Hello.
Vancouver's Andy Willis hosts Andy Land Radio every Wednesday at 10:30 p.m. Pacific time on CIRT-FM and can be streamed 24/7 on andylandradio.com. Hello, Andy.
Hello, baby. I'm pissed off and angry as hell.
I didn't even buy that for a second. I know you're tired because you just started a new job as a bartender and you work till four.
I'm the worst. The worst. Shitty tippers and ugly people.
All right. Also on the West Coast is Hafiz Noorani. He's one of the most sought-after digital analysis and marketing experts in the field and the very excellent producer of this show. Hello, Hafiz.
Aww. Thank you. You're way too kind.
I know that.
I appreciate the welcome.
Yeah, I even meant some of that, though. joining us today is a very special guest, a longtime friend of mine. Dale Curd is in his third season as host of the acclaimed CBC documentary TV show Hello, Goodbye. Of the show's success, says Globe and Mail's John Doyle, much of that has to do with Curd's ability to draw closely held stories and unexpressed feelings out of people, which only makes sense as Dale has for over 16 years been a therapist with a specialty in talking to men about the issues, emotions, and inner conflicts that men face every day but rarely talk about. To that end, in 2019, Dale launched themenslist.com, an online directory of mental health and wellness professionals who offer services to men seeking counseling and support in Canada, the U.S., and the United Kingdom. A very important service that men should really avail themselves of. Also in 2019, which was obviously a busy year, Dale and his wife Kimberly Alexander published their first book with HarperCollins titled Living Lightly, Bring Happiness and Calm to Your Everyday. I first met Dale when he produced and hosted Guy Talk, a national call-in radio show. How many years ago do you think that was, Dale?
Oh, man. I think that was like 2009, 2010, wasn't it?
I think it was. It might even have been earlier or later. It was a long time ago. And
it was a long time ago.
Yeah, and let's just say it was a long time ago. But we appreciate you bringing your expertise to bear on this subject today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. I'm glad to be here. Happy to be the token therapy geek.
Okay. Anger in the dictionary is defined as a strong feeling of annoyance, displeasure, or hostility. You could also add to that definition one of the only expressions men feel safe expressing, as it masks a whole lot of other feelings which have traditionally been too squishy for men to admit to. And today we're going to look at why. I'll start first with Hafiz. Hafiz, have you been angry before when you were covering up feelings that were not about anger, embarrassment, or something else?
Look, I've never had anger issues. Have I felt angry? Yes. I do have family members, and I do come from I don't want to say a full family of people that are angry, but I have people that have had anger issues in my extended family, and so I know what that looks like. However, for myself, getting angry is something that I have done, but usually it's for a good reason.
Okay. And I'll just jump in there that I know that in my family, anger amongst men is an issue, that covers up a whole lot of other things that is holding some people back, and has disrupted a lot of relationships. And it sometimes becomes a beast that is its own thing. And I can't claim that I've not been claimed by that at times. And afterwards, I get an angover, which is, why the hell was I so angry? And then I'm exhausted from being angry. And then I start thinking, okay, well, what the hell was it?
I'm usually more so the cause of anger than the actual anger.
In some cases, the cause is, there's reasons to be angry. But we're talking today about reasons not to be angry, but we use anger as a response. Let's go to Andy Willis, who insincerely claimed that he was mad as hell and not going to take it anymore as the show started. Another reference for those of you who are millennials, look it up.
Network.
Andy, have you ever been angry, like really angry about something, and not known why you were so angry about it?
Oh no, I I know when I'm angry and I know exactly what it's about.
Okay, have you ever felt that your anger was misplaced and covering up something else?
No, I would definitely say that my family was very angry people. They had kind of a high standard for things, and for me it kind of went over to me. And I just get really pissed off when people are really dedicated to defending their own mediocrity, and that pisses me off to high heaven.
Okay, and let's move over to Paul Doroshenko. Now, Paul, as a lawyer, you have to, certainly when you're in court, you have to contain your anger, even when there's some really foolish rulings coming from the bench. Do you have a technique for controlling anger, and have you ever felt angry and then afterwards said, what the hell was I so mad about?
Well, I think it's common that you're wondering, you know, your hangover. I'd never heard that term before.
Angover,
as soon as I heard it,
angover.
I knew immediately what it was, because there's sometimes you're looking at your behavior or your thought process that led you to being angry, and you're wondering, why the hell did I get so fucking angry about that? Hardly worth the emotional turmoil I put myself through. But I mean, sometimes I'll tell you, like in the course of my work, I need to sometimes rile myself up to make myself angry, to make myself care about something. I see such horrible things in the course of my experience with the justice system. Sometimes I've just become so accustomed to it that, you know, you see somebody getting screwed and it's your client, and you have to force yourself to get angry, to really push yourself to move. It can be a useful thing.
Okay. Let's talk now to Dale. Of course, Dale, you in your practice talking to men have heard probably everything that you've heard in this show so far and more about men and anger. What have you learned in your 16 years of dealing with men? Why do men default to anger?
You know, I think most, and it's interesting, you're right, I have heard all of these sort of explanations of anger over the years. And I think we default to anger because of the way we're raised, typically in male society. We're achievement raised or achievement conditioned. And because of that, everything that we see, everything that we experience is about, you know, relativity. It's about winning or losing. And so you need a very powerful, if you're conditioned that way, you need kind of a go-to feeling to help you establish boundaries, to defend yourself, to take somebody something else, or take something that you want from somebody else. You need a go-to feeling for that. And aggression, which is sort of an outcome or behavioral outcome of anger, is kind of our go-to. When we talk about anger, what we often don't talk about when we say anger issues are the guys that have difficulty expressing anger, or the guys that mask anger with humor and laughing, or they mask it with passive aggressive stuff like, sort of withdrawing or not caring, or, you know, sort of the meh, I don't really give a shit about that. When you can tell that they really do give a shit, but they're just not comfortable being angry. Quite often when we're talking about anger, it's really behavior, and it's the behavior that's leading towards aggression or violence. But there's a whole realm of anger behavior that we rarely talk about as men, which is this flipping, sort of silently flipping the bird, because we're really not comfortable with anger or aggression.
That's very interesting. And I wonder, are you describing anger as, for some men, a form of the fight or flight instinct?
It's absolutely part of that. So it is part, certainly, the fight instinct or the fight response to a fear stimulus. And we learn that. We learn that really young, that that the best way to defend, the best two ways, let's say, to defend ourselves are to fight back or run away. And some of us learn that, you know, to freeze or become invisible is useful as well, or to not attract attention to ourselves. But to fight back is something we learn quite young. We also learn that in male society, to fight back is valued or makes us more valuable in some circles, which is why we're kind of, you know, we kind of see guys who are strike first, think later, kind of guys.
If they think later.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. If they have that sense of remorse or if they have that sense of insight after, sometimes that's rare. You're right.
Now, and sorry, guys, I'll get around the horn in a second. I want to ask you about another question for Dale. It seems that anger is almost respected and necessary, if you're going to be respected, as a captain of industry. The idea that you're going to get pissed off and throw things and scream and yell. I mean, Harvey Weinstein is a good example. If it hadn't been for the sexual improprieties that he committed, he was known for being a rage hound. And it's all through Hollywood where people scream and yell all the time. And the bigger you are, the more powerful you are, I would think the more comfortable you should be with not having to yell at people, but they yell. And it seems that yelling, anger, aggression, as you mentioned, they're linked, is sometimes prized in our society amongst those who are in higher offices.
You're absolutely right. It was kind of in your original, the way you introed the question, when you said captain of industry. You know, the way we see each other, especially men, boys and men, we see each other in relative terms psychologically. So who's bigger, who's stronger, who has more resources, who has more influence, who has more authority. And then we kind of, you know, have our own reactions to that. You have guys who fall in line and they very quickly establish that they're lesser than the other person. And then you have guys who flip back at authority, have really strong rebellion against authority. But it's an interesting dynamic. I don't understand why in entertainment, and you and I both know, we both had experiences in entertainment, why the more authority or the more profile or the more, I don't know what you'd call it, more of an icon that a person is, that they seem to also carry this screaming thing that goes along with it or yelling thing that goes along with it as if it's the only way that they can get anything done. And you know, what I know from a therapy point of view is that inside that person is a deep insecurity. Like these are people who have felt firsthand the impact of being screamed at and being shamed and being belittled or humiliated. And they know how effective it is as a tool because they felt it firsthand. There's this great scene. I don't know if you remember it. There's this awesome scene in Rock and Rolla, the Guy Ritchie film, where I'm trying to remember who it is now, which character it is, but he's teaching the young guy, he's teaching him how to slap a face, how to slap another man's face to make him feel like, to make him feel essentially humiliated, that there's a certain way to slap a face. And it's a crazy great scene in terms of understanding male hierarchical psychology.
Okay. That's interesting that there's a specific way, because anybody slapping my face is you know, pistols at dawn. But let's go around the horn. I want to ask you, first of all, I'll go to Paul. Paul, have you ever seen women exhibit the same anger that a man has exhibited? and yet be regarded very differently afterwards than a man. Oh, well,
that's regular. That's a consistent thing I've seen. You know, women, a man expresses his anger, say, in the workplace. You know, he's in a management level. You know, people will often defer to it, and that they won't even necessarily talk about it. They won't be a discussion about it. It'll just be, okay, this is what we have to deal with. A woman expresses it, not identically, but, you know, in her own way, and she's just looked at as a bitch. And it's a really unfair way of viewing it, but it's unfortunate that this is something that we seem to be trained to do. And so you're rewarded as a guy, right? You're rewarded for this behavior. You rise in the ranks.
Well, there's guys who, you know, if you're in business, and I've seen this, a guy might be a real bastard, and the people will call him a bastard, and that's almost a badge of honor. Whereas you call a woman a bitch, you have diminished her. You've diminished her in so many ways on so many levels for the exact same behavior. I mean, there's what my wife Leanna always calls the asshole to awesome ratio, which is the more awesome you are, the more of an asshole people will let you be. And that often applies in show business, that they indulge the people around them, indulge them in their childlike, childish behavior. And that's the asshole to awesome ratio. But you've got, so men, if they seem to be high performers and they yell and scream, well, that guy's a real prick and he's a bastard. But that doesn't take away, that almost deifies them in some people's eyes because they've achieved something.
They get a free ride. They get a free ride for it.
A free ride and a boost.
For it.
Yeah, they get a boost for it because they're, you know, that's seen as being very masculine, take charge behavior. And I've seen women exhibit a milder form of it and be censured and looked at as a bitch, because people will work with a son of a bitch guy. They'll work with a prick, but they don't want to work with a bitch. And that's just a double standard that I hope is slowly fading away. Hafiz,
pisses me off. It gets me angry.
It gets you angry, yeah. Well, there are
women treated this way.
Well, there are good reasons for anger. I mean, injustice.
Don't tell me to calm down, though.
Yeah. Well, has it ever worked ever that somebody who's angry is told to calm down and they just say, "Oh," and calm down?
That's You're right.
Throwing gasoline on a fire. Hafiz.
Yes.
Have you ever? Dale mentioned that sometimes men don't express their anger as anger. They'll express it through humor, maybe some cutting remarks, and maybe passive aggressively. Have you ever done that? You ever felt that you just couldn't hold in the anger, but you knew in the circumstances you were in, you couldn't exhibit it as aggression, and so you transformed it into something else?
No, never, Stephen. I don't know where I've ever done that. I have you seen me ever do that? No, of course I do. I do that all the time. I don't usually feel it as an anger. For me, when I was young, I would always notice that when people would get angry at me, if I didn't react with reciprocal anger, usually because I couldn't because I was smaller and whatnot. But if I did something to poke at them, I could win the rest of the people around them to make them look like an idiot. So that's usually what I'd end up doing. And it was my defense mechanism against people that come in at me that are angry. It just so happens now I use that on Twitter.
Okay. And listen, I'm not a tall man myself. I have lots of leg room on any airline.
Must be nice.
What you mentioned, I got into fights with people, physical fights. You know, there'd be two guys twice my size fighting with me, and I would physically fight them back. And I never lost. My glasses always lost, but the rest of me never lost. But I also learned that by making certain cutting comments to somebody, that's worse than a punch because it humiliates them and robs them of their, it makes their aggression that they're exhibiting make them seem lesser rather than greater. Dale, do you agree that that happens?
You know, I think the scalpel is always better than the bat. Unless you're, you know, unless you're in the movie Casino, then a bat is actually quite effective. yeah, absolutely. I think what we're coming to terms with as guys, and there's some guys certainly out on social who are helping men kind of reshape or retool, if you will, what anger and what having a higher EQ as men, with the benefits of that, you know, like guys like Mark Green at Remaking Manhood, I would say, doing a great job of that. We're learning that, you know, to strike out in a Hulk-like fashion, to be the aggressor and to be violent, that's a very limited or low EQ. And like you were saying earlier about the bosses that are screaming and yelling, I think to a certain extent, a certain age group still sees that with respect. But I can tell you, because we work with a lot of Gen Zs and a lot of Gen Ys in our online world, there's really little respect for that kind of behavior.
Good.
It's seen through very, very quickly.
Finally.
It's just a toddler, you know, it's a 6-foot toddler. And I think that's what people see, that this is somebody with very little emotional awareness, very little emotional dexterity, and a very low EQ. So I think you're right. I think some people learn, like you were saying, and Hafiz was saying, some people learn very quickly that the way to not only deflect or diffuse or escape is to take out the verbal scalpel and to slice right into the heart of that aggressor's vulnerability. And if that buys you a few moments of laughter and a few seconds to diffuse, great. It's a great tool. Absolutely.
Well, you know, might have mentioned this before on the show, but when terrorists attacked in France, they didn't go after the news media, which had been, you know, very aggressive in denouncing them. They went after a satirical magazine. Because once somebody who has been built up to be scary and big, which gives them power, once you have laughed at them, once you've seen them in their underwear, so to speak, that level of menace can never be, or it takes a long time for that level of menace to ever be reclaimed. And sometimes mockery to people like that it robs people of power. Humor has a tremendous ability to not only rob a bully of power, but also to take some of the aggression out of the situation, some of the charge out of the situation. And I've been in situations where the other person actually laughs too. And that sort of gives everyone a moment to take a breath.
That's the best situation. I mean, if you think about it, isn't that what they did during World War II time as well, like with Charlie Chaplin responding to, you know, this threat of totalitarianism by mocking them? And I think
the great dictator, yes.
Yeah, and Mel Brooks and whatnot carried that on further. And I mean, making people who get angry appear like, you know, lesser than what they are is, I think, the right move in society. I think, you know, these people that get riled up and try to, you know, push a message out of where that is the right way to handle things need to be showed that society gets along way better when everyone's calm and cool.
All right. Now, Andy, you're still with us, I hope.
Still am.
Now, Andy, this is going to be an absolutely ignorant, cisgendered, hetero question, okay? You're a gay man. Is masculinity defined by or underlined or underscored or boosted by anger in amongst gay men the same way it is amongst straight men?
No, I wouldn't say so.
What would you say the difference is?
I'll tell you this much for nothing. I'd much rather work for a bitch, because at least I know that the reason why she's pissed off is probably the same reason why I am, which is that no one's fucking listening and no one's doing their job. So, I mean, so I'd much rather work. Whereas, like, every time I've worked for a dude who's been raging, usually he's either A, absolutely incompetent, or 2, lazy as fuck. And I don't stick around. I beat feet and I get out of there. Now, I wonder if that has to do with the fact that I was socialized to see anger as something that women experience. My great grandmother, who's my mother's, they adopted me. She would always be angry about everything. And she would always be screaming and yelling and this and that and nagging and just up my asshole about everything. And my great-grandfather, who's my dad, would just sit and watch hockey and he'd be quiet. And when anything was happening, he wouldn't do anything. So I learned that when you get frustrated, you get angry. And angry is the most effective way to get people to listen to you. Now, I'm 30 and I realize that anger can get you into a lot of trouble. So I've actually learned that being silent and just staring at someone and just waiting for them to continue speaking does a whole lot more than engaging them when they're angry.
Interesting.
I like to know what Dale thinks about that, but yeah.
Yeah, Dale?
Well, you know, it's interesting because you can imagine over the 16 years that I've worked with a lot of hetero guys and a lot of gay guys, and especially in a group
We're more fun, aren't we?
We are tons of fun. Always the party. Always the party. And I can, you know, I get, because I get this question a lot, more so from gay guys, obviously, than straight guys, which is, you know, around anger, like, and how comfortable, you know, they are with their anger or what's been modeled for them. It's been my experience that there's actually very little difference. It may come out slightly differently, but the reasons that they get angry or what they're angry about is certainly no different than hetero guys. You know, they get angry when somebody, when they're trying to defend something, they get angry when somebody steps on a boundary, they get angry when, you know, when somebody gets up in their face, they get angry when they're trying to tell somebody what's really important to them, especially if you've got two guys who are a couple and they're in the same group and they're having it out in terms of their relationship stuff. There's really no difference in my experience. But I thought what Andy said about socializing, like what we've come to expect is normal or normative around anger. Like what was our family experience or what was our predominant experience growing up about anger? That's what has become normative, right? Like in my world, I grew up with a lot of arguing, a lot of violence. And so what's normal or normative for me is yelling and getting right up in somebody's face. And, you know, it took me two marriages and a whole pile of therapy and a couple of houses to figure out that, wow, I just can't do that. Like that's maybe normal for me, but it's not normal for anybody else. And I think that's the wake-up call when it comes to guys learning what their anger is really all about, is trying to figure out what they experienced as a kid, what is normal for them, how they see that, and then trying to figure out, well, what actually makes me effective at just being a regular human being in the world.
It's interesting. You know, it's interesting you mentioned, Dale, it took two marriages for you to learn that. And, the example set by my parents, bless them, they're very much like the Costanzas on Seinfeld, but not funny. I learned certain patterns, which to me were, absolutely, this is just how you respond. When I yell, you yell back, and we just get it out. You know, you say whatever, you get it all out, and then, okay, it's done with. It's finished. You know, I discovered later in life that I was the only one in my family for whom it was actually finished once the yelling was over. Everyone else carried, siblings carried an awful lot under the skin. But I know that Leanna and I come from very different backgrounds. And certainly when we've been together 22 years, when we were first together, and even still today, there will be things we argue about. And I think she's coming at me on something because my experience watching the interactions of my parents, the same comment coming from my mother to my father would have been a provocation. With her, it's actually just a question, and I'll respond with anger. And then afterwards think, what the hell? I used to think that I was the normal one and she was the abnormal one until I realized, no, actually the reverse is true. Afterwards I would think, what got me so damned angry? And I realized it was just defensiveness and vulnerability. And I think that there's still a tremendous bias or a media message against men being vulnerable, against that being a male trait that doesn't make you effeminate or feminize you, as if, you know, being adopting some of the more feminine or typically feminine behaviors such as empathy and so on, as if that's a bad thing. But there's still many media messages where, I mean, our heroes, our male heroes, still break the rules, make their own rules, and they're just not vulnerable. They just don't make themselves vulnerable or emotionally available. Paul, has this ever, in your life, has this ever been something where you realized, shit, I did this?
You know, there's so much to unpack with your what you were just saying there.
just pick something.
So, fear of showing that you're vulnerable. You know, I think it's to some extent. I mean, I grew up in a family that was pretty calm, there wasn't a whole lot of arguing. And when it did happen, it was really quite devastating because you weren't prepared for it because you didn't see it, right? So it was so rare. Generally, people. You know, my parents got along and they didn't yell at us. When, you know, in the rare events that did happen, when there was outbursts of anger, that was really shocking and would lead you to be, you know, somewhat traumatized. Whereas if you heard it every day, you might just think, yeah, well, you know, that's humans on the planet doing their thing. So it's a different experience for me, but I think it also has to do with my generation. You know, when I was going to university, we were talking about safe walks, and it was a real vibrant discussion about feminist issues, and there was a vibrant discussion about, you know, where men stand and men's roles. And I think that sort of continued on for my generation, and I sort of look at the younger men who are coming up and, you know, who are maybe 40 years old and not 50 years old, that discussion sort of fell away and they don't seem to be as prepared to think about these things. At least that's my experience with some younger men.
Okay. Anyone else?
Really, like it's what is the hot topic of the generation and how do we learn? Right.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah.
Anyone else want to jump in on that particular topic? Okay, go ahead.
I would say that our generation is like, no anger is a good thing. And I think anger can be very healthy when it's used in an appropriate way and in the appropriate context. It's a catalyst. It's a motivator. It gets people to protest. It gets people to say, fuck it, I hate my job. I'm quitting and going to do what I actually want to do. I think anger is a brilliant thing. One of my favorite TV characters who does anger really well is Susie Green.
Oh my God, she's so good.
On Curb Your Enthusiasm. I mean, maybe she doesn't do it well, but Susie Essman, kind of the actor who plays Susie Green, she said really well in this 92nd Street Y a convo about how, you know, people aren't supposed to be angry and we're told to hide our anger. But sometimes it's just really good to let that anger out because it's healthy as opposed to bottling it up. I look at my great-grandfather. I'm sure he was so pissed half the time when my great-grandmother was raging about stuff. But he kept it in. And I could see how that really hurt him. So I don't know, Dale, like, what's an appropriate way to express anger? Like, what are those contexts?
Well, you know, that's a great question because it's so nuanced. It's so... It's so much about what's the outcome I'm trying to achieve,
right?
You know, so you're absolutely right when you say it's got to be expressed. Anger is one of those feelings that we're not supposed to keep inside. It wreaks havoc on our biology when we try to keep it inside. So we're designed to get it out and to express it. I think certainly there's very little, if any, tolerance in our Western society currently for any real violence, although it is certainly in some forms of media mythologized, without a doubt. But there is at the same time sort of a double standard around mythologizing it and actually experiencing it in a day-to-day. What I see amongst my son's friends who are in their 20s, is that it's anger is something they just take a wide swath around, especially in their relationships. They don't want any conflict whatsoever in their relationships. God forbid, should they be labeled as, you know, toxic or, you know, violent or that kind of thing, that they steer well away from it. You know, there's nothing wrong with raising your voice. There's nothing wrong with expressing a point of view. There's nothing wrong with saying to someone, this behavior that you're doing doesn't work for me anymore, or I have a boundary around, or I have a line around this kind of behavior in a relationship, and setting that point. Where it becomes an issue is when you're, you know, when you're really up in somebody's face, you've really crushed their personal space. Clearly violence and abuse, when it's psychological, like anger is, to teach guys how to get anger out in a clean way, is a real process, to get them to take responsibility for how they feel, what they feel, what was the trigger, how clear are they on the trigger, and then for them to get that burst out in a responsible way so that it can be heard. Because ultimately, not so far down, that's what we all want as guys. We just want to be listened to, especially with what's important to us. We want to be heard. And the worst thing that can happen to an angry guy is that what's important, the thing that he's trying to say, is completely dismissed because of how he's behaving.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah,
I think
agree.
That Hafiz, agree, disagree?
I agree.
Yeah, okay. And Paul, agree,
well,
disagree?
It's not just with guys. You know, as soon as there's anger expressed, you know, sort of the first tendency is to dismiss it if it's expressed in a way that is not, you know, is not comfortable with you.
Well, so it's basically what's being rejected or dismissed is not the core of what's made you angry. It's the method of delivery and of communication.
Absolutely.
Of that.
Well,
that
it's also a desire to diffuse the anger. So instead of focusing on what the issue is, it's just like, it's the settle down. It's the calm down moment. Calm down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, again, never works.
Andy?
I have another question for Dale. Like, cross-culturally, can you, like, what have you observed when it comes to anger? Like, are the French just like, you know, can you just get away with getting pissed off in France? Like, I don't know. Like
why would you pick the French out of all people?
Well, they did a lot of shit too, Stephen. Come on.
I don't know. I like the French. I really do. But I don't know, like, cross-culturally, though, like, what could you speak to about anger, Dale?
Who are the angriest people in the world?
Who are the angriest people? You guys, this is a great question.
It's
the gays, yeah.
Searching for stereotypes here.
Come on. Yeah. Which societies which groups? So,
let me reframe the question. Cross-culturally, where is anger observed differently than like in Canada? Because here I feel like we're very passive. And elsewhere, I feel like you can be a little more assertive and it's less threatening because it's more culturally accepted.
You know, I don't know if I can. It's a great question. It makes me think that somebody should study this, because I don't know if I can actually speak to that. I would only have anecdotal experience.
Right.
And all I can say about that is not so much cross-culturally as in community, but more so in terms of dominant forces in a family. So where you've got an authoritarian paternal influence, there's clearly, that's the message that becomes the go-to signal for any boy raised in that kind of environment, either to do the same thing or to be in rebellion against it. So I see that often. I see in single parent families where the parent is female, which is predominant, I see a real sort of loss of emotional awareness, and then anger just becomes the easiest thing to go to. So you see.
Sorry to interrupt, Dale. Is that amongst the male child, or is it amongst the mother?
Yeah.
Oh, the male child.
even the male child, I've seen it with female children of in single parent families. It's almost like the influence of the father, if it's a good father figure, provides that protection and that security in the child's life, that validation of protection and security. And then if the father is toxic or a toxic influence, and then then the child grows up without that sense of security or validation or protection. So then adopts or learns that anger is the way to get things done in the world. And I'm very much oversimplifying here. I don't know if I can, you know, cross-culturally really identify anything. You know, certainly when you look at, and I don't know of any studies, to be honest with you, Andy, that have been done. But it's a great fucking question, because you look at some cultures, like why has nobody dived into this when it comes to hooliganism in European soccer, right, or European football? Like, which cultures are more prone to this? Is it socioeconomic?
Or even the Middle East?
Cultural? Yeah, or even the
Middle East. Like, when you see people in the Middle East react to something that happens in the West, and you see large protests, especially in some places like Pakistan, or even in a democratic society, or so-called democratic society like India, where you have mad violence right now over sectarian ideas, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think you're speaking about what's going on between is it the Hindus and the Muslims?
Yeah, in Delhi right now, there's riots happening, and you have this mob mentality that's taken over, and it is expressed through anger, and it's other men getting other people riled up and angry, and this communal anger. Now, I mean, if you look at what's happening in North America with protests and whatnot, it's vastly different on how we represent our frustrations, right? And it's interesting.
Yes and no.
Look at
what happened in Ferguson. You push a people, you marginalize a people far enough, and they're gonna
and it will
out.
Get violent. Yes.
Yeah, it's absolutely. And especially if they feel that marginalization. This is my big issue, sort of anecdotally, with what's been going on this past couple of weeks with the blockades on the rail. I mean, what we're missing here, the dialogue that's been missing in all of this is that is our view, our Western white view of reconciliation versus the First Nations or Indigenous cultures' view of reconciliation. You know, we seem to think that reconciliation is going to be, are you good? I'm good. Okay, good. We're good. Let's just move on. We're good, right? Yeah, we're good. But for them, this is way, way deep. And it's about dialogue, and it's about rumbling. Like for generations, they haven't really had a voice. So what we're hearing right now is really rumbling and a little bit of reckoning. We're not anywhere near reconciliation yet on any level. And it really shocks me when I hear people say, I don't get why they're doing this, and I don't get why they're doing that. And it's like, it's pretty clear if you take a look that there's been, I would say, a pretty hefty degree of cultural marginalization for generations. And you just can't expect the people who've experienced that to catch up overnight just because we want them to.
No, definitely not.
That's true. That's a very good point. And it goes to Andy's point that there are some things which it behooves you to be angry about, and you have good reason to be angry about because you have been wronged. And then it comes into the other part of our conversation, which is how do you then express that to get the outcome that you want? And I wonder, Dale, if there's a technique that you've discovered for men to between the trigger of something that where you recognize you're now getting angry and the expression of the anger for you to stop and say, what am I angry about? Like, are there steps you can take, steps downwards to de-escalate within your own head before you respond? Or is this just something that is still so ingrained that comes afterwards, the why did I respond that way?
Absolutely, and you've kind of mentioned the solution or the technique in your question. So what we do when we have guys and we're trying to teach them or model for them how to recognize, articulate, and express anger, what we're doing is a variety of different tactics of whether that be what we're trying to do is we're trying to lengthen the amount of time between the trigger and the lighting of the fuse. So there's a variety of different ways that we can do that. We can do that through slowing the moment down. We can do that through breathing. We can do that for getting them to walk away, take five steps away. And even when you have two guys in conflict, just the sheer tactic of increasing the physical proximities from a couple of feet to 5 or 10 feet can actually start to help them bring
really
blood pressure
physical
down
physical space.
Physical space. I've seen it time and time again. We have two. You'll have two guys who are in each other's spaces, and just by intervening and increasing the physical space between them, can go a long way to helping them de-escalate. It's one of the things I have to teach cops when we're talking about de-escalation in a mental health crisis. Is getting them to use their cognitive powers rather than their limbic system reactionary impulses. And the way you
primal.
It's hardwired in us, right?
Yeah.
This is a point I was going to bring up before, because in the 90s, there was all this talk about, you know, men are wounded and men have fragile egos. And that's what makes us so prone to being, that's why we're so defensive, because our egos are so fragile. And I don't think anything's further from the truth. The key mm-hmm. is that we're conditioned as from the time that we're little boys to be vigilant. We're always on alert. And, you know, for somebody in terms of being somebody encroaching on us, whether it be their point of view encroaches on us or whether they physically encroach upon us, we're taught that that's what you do as a guy.
But I think it's more than conditioning and more than being taught. It's 200,000 years of human evolution that generally worked. When you've got to be prepared to protect the tribe or protect the village and wake up and deal with whatever threat is there, you know, this is something that is, I think, again, deep in our spinal column telling us what to do. And it's something that we have to be prepared to step back and use our mental skills to be able to address and turn around when we, you know, feel that tendency. There's lots of things that I think we're driven to do by instinct that we, you know, have to step up and recognize that, okay, this is not a good pattern of thinking for this particular circumstance. Might have been a good pattern of thinking for my great ancestor, you know, 28,000 years ago.
Well, there's times when I look back on my 30s, early 30s, or even earlier, and I see that the way I responded was not necessarily going to get me the outcome I wanted. Sometimes it very much did. Sometimes it very much did not. And I know that what I try to do, and Dale, you tell me if this is a helpful thing, when Liana says something to me that triggers me or gets me feeling, I try to stop and say, what did you mean by that? Because sometimes, I mean, human beings are very, very poor communicators when we use words. And words mean different things to different people in different contexts and different frames of reference. So very much sometimes asking somebody, what did you mean by that? If they did mean an insult, they might feel like an idiot explaining it. But it also can help to get to defuse the whole situation to be clear if you really have a reason to be angry.
I think if you're trying to make the transition from being highly reactive to more responsive, which is ultimately what we're talking about here, is the pathway through, then you absolutely want to look at meaning, because what we make things mean gets us into more trouble than anything else. And if you know what I think somebody's words mean and what they actually meant, there could be a huge gap in between those two realities.
A lot of subtext sometimes in words that the other person not raised the same way wouldn't take the same subtext.
Subtext, cultural nuance, being able to hear that somebody might be attacking me because they feel hurt or they feel that they feel threatened. So, you know, it's just, there's a variety of different things that are going on, but you're absolutely right in that the pathway through is to explore meaning. What did you mean by that? You know, like we have the classic guy gets cut off by another guy driving on the road. They get into it. They, you know, hot pursuit. They get out of the cars. There's a pause. Hopefully, ideally, there's a pause moment with, dude, you cut me off. What were you thinking? The other guy hopefully says, dude, I don't even know you exist. I'm trying to get from point A to point B. It's not personal.
You right. Know? Well, there's that.
Now, somebody asks me, what did you mean by that? I'll tell you right now, if I originally intended to insult them or to challenge them, I'm going to change my story. What did you mean by that? Oh, I meant that you look lovely, darling.
Is that Paul? That we're laughing, but Paul, is that because in that moment you've taken a chance to reconsider what you were reacting to and how to go about, you know, how to take a step forward? This is a side door for you to get out of a situation you really don't want to be in.
Of course, but if anybody asks me, what did you mean by that? I'm looking at them as being probably more aggressive than me, and I don't want to have a fight. So, you know, chances are I'm using that as my opportunity to, I've stepped into it. Better step out of it. Fine, start backpedaling, buddy.
Well, so we found a possible way, which is, what did you mean by that? And to talking about, you know, Dale, the cars, it's an odd male, and I've not noticed women do this. It's an odd thing when men are driving cars and a guy determines you're not going fast enough, so he passes you. And for some reason, we always look at each other. The drivers always look at each other when the other person is passing them. And there's just this odd hostility or something. And I don't even understand what it is. I know that's anecdotal and not really what we're talking about, but it does, it is primal. It is primal.
This has been studied. This has been studied. The guy in front of you who's driving slowly, he's an idiot. And the guy who passes you is a fucking maniac. It's already been resolved.
Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that study. Thank you, Paul.
Yeah.
Well, I think that we've learned a lot today, and everybody sharing, you know, on this show as we do, sharing real personal stories and being vulnerable. Here we are, a bunch of men talking to other men and not feeling uncomfortable exposing vulnerabilities, which I think more and more men are feeling that it's not unmanly to do so. And I'm happy to hear that Andy. What are you, Andrew? About 14?
No.
Okay, yeah. I'm kidding. You're late 20s, early 30s.
All right, no, you shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear any of that, or else I'm gonna start raging on you.
All right, but Andy's of a younger generation. What did I mean by that? Andy's of a younger generation, and he's saying that amongst his generation, they just want to stay the hell away from people who yell. They don't see it as anything that burnishes somebody's masculinity and therefore their alpha male position. They see it as what it really is, which is somebody who's behaving like a child, and I don't want to be around a child in a man's body. And that's encouraging. And Dale, you say you work with Gen Y, Gen Z, and I don't know what we're going to do with the next generation now that we've come to Z. It's going to have to be Generation A, like the way we name tornadoes. But you deal with Gen Y and Gen Z. Are you noticing the same kind of thing that Andy is mentioning? A different view of masculinity expressed through anger?
I don't think there's that much. I don't even think there's a connection, in my experience, between masculinity and anger. I think not sort of topically. I mean, I think what you're asking is a highly nuanced question again. There is a change for sure. There's an avoidance of, I'm going to say there's an avoidance of anything that is uncomfortable. There's an avoidance of difficult conversations. There's an avoidance of difficult moments
There's an avoidance of difficult emotions. And what I see, which I think is really interesting in terms of how this is going to show up as they get older, is more retreating, more privacy within the relationship, or privacy that is protected. And that to me is, I don't know where that's going to lead us, but what I see is this avoidance of anything difficult. And I think our emotions or feelings, strong feelings, are examples of those. I look at Greta Thunberg as an example of where I think we're headed in terms of emotion. I think she can be defiant and she can be forthright, but she's not angry and yelling per se. And I think there's a distaste in the younger generation for anger and yelling.
It's funny. I find her very angry, and I don't blame her. But and I think what you're saying is a topic for another show, which is the fact that nowadays people can curate their entire experience. What they take in, what they read, bias confirmation, and people can build their own silos. And that is not a better situation than what preceded it, which is people looking up to people who are angry and saying, well, that's a sign of masculinity and a sign of power.
Going on to that, where this generational anger thing, how about with cancel culture and things like that, where we see, a generational reaction to, let's say, a certain person
There's another topic for another day. Cancel culture is way too big to dig into right now.
Well, I'm just talking about in terms of anger, that is something that is expressed.
That's, I can, right, do it really quickly.
Okay.
I think the reason why our generation is not too hip on confronting each other is because of computer-mediated communication.
Absolutely.
So it's easy for us to hide. So we're not socialized to engage in hard conversations. Now, when it comes to cancel culture, if we're all using our phones, there's always been a cancel culture. It's just before you'd go in the streets and do it. Now you can do it from your phone. So, I mean, there you go.
Well, I think that there's actually a lot more aggression being expressed because people aren't doing it face to face.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's, again, topic for another
just
day.
Like you. Fuck you! It's 11 o'clock. I can't believe
you're shutting us down like this.
Yeah, what the fuck, Steven?
I'm not fucking around here.
It's been an hour.
What are you whiny babies going on about? Who made me in charge? Me. That's who made me in charge. All right.
Starting a protest right here.
Yeah, already. You guys are. The panelists are revolting. Okay.
Wait a second.
There you got it. But I think what we've discovered is that there are methods of diffusing anger within ourselves, within situations. We've discovered that it's okay for men to express their vulnerability because, listen, suicide rate is highest amongst men over 50. And those are men who were generationally taught that men didn't talk about their feelings. And certainly didn't talk about their feelings when they felt that they were failures. And then when people won't hire them because they're over 50 and they want magical millennials, they feel they can't provide. They don't know how to metabolize this new position for them in the world. It's not the vision they thought of over 50 where they would be. And they end their lives. And that's the toxicity of that feeling that you can either yell and cover up a whole bunch of other feelings, which is really you covering up being vulnerable and scared, or you can find a way to, which is takes bravery and courage and finding the right person who you trust, but even sometimes just telling it to yourself and being honest to yourself that I'm feeling vulnerable, I'm feeling scared. And you know what? Those are natural human emotions, and embrace them as such. And get comfortable and get past them, because it's the running away from emotion like that is the thing that drives us crazy. Would you agree, Dale?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's running because it doesn't go away. That's the thing. It doesn't matter if I run away from it or I try to bury it or I try to compartmentalize it or I try to drink it or smoke it away. It doesn't actually go away. And so this, you know, this is really about being willing to figure out what I'm really triggered by, understanding why I'm getting angry, and then finding ways of resolving and expressing that anger. That's how you build a healthier overall mental health, is coming to terms with and understanding what we feel and expressing those feelings.
All right.
It makes us, you know, this is all about relatability, right? How relatable we are, which is the process of relationship. And I think that's what I see guys are craving for. They're trying to figure out how to be more successful at relationship. And this is the number one path through that, is to become more relatable, to know your own life experience and to be able to share that with another person. That's what makes us relatable.
Okay. And at that point, we will, despite the protests of some of the panelists, we will end the program, because I think this was a deep dive and there's a lot for people who are listening to absorb. And so let's not overload anybody. I want to thank Paul Doroshenko, QC, criminal defense lawyer, very well known and successful in British Columbia. Thank you, Paul.
My pleasure.
Andy Willis, I encourage you to listen to Andyland Radio if you're not in his broadcast area for CIRT-FM on Wednesdays at 10:30 p.m. Pacific, then go to andylandradio.com. It's 24/7. You can listen, and Andy is a bright spot, a bright spot on this show, and listen to his show. He'll be a bright spot of your week. Thanks for joining us. Hafiz Narani. Hafiz, once again, you've put together a terrific show.
Thank you.
I actually meant it that time. Hafiz is also and I can speak from experience, having worked with Hafiz on some stuff for the FU Network, a digital analysis and marketing expert. Everyone uses the term expert these days, especially with digital stuff. But talking and getting the counsel from Hafiz, I can tell you, he actually knows what he's talking about, and he's very sharp. So if people want to reach you, Hafiz, it's at Feezy Does It. Andy, to reach you, it's at Andyland Radio. What is it?
Yes, it's at Andyland Radio. And you know what? Someone reached out to me in the midnight hour, and her name is Michelle Baduski, and I want to give her a shout out. She is a monthly subscriber to the FU Network. So everyone give a big round of applause. She loves Woo! The show. She's giving us money. So Woo! There you go.
Michelle Baduski is actually the host of Keeping It Real on FU Politics, one of the most popular and very real, raw shows, because there we were talking today about vulnerability. She lays it all out there. She's had quite a life, and she lays out all that life experience for people to learn from that. So check out Michelle. Check out Keeping It Real. Michelle Baduski is a gem. She's about an hour and a half outside Brandon, Manitoba. So you can imagine how she always says, you can imagine how popular my opinions are here. Paul Doroshenko, how can people reach you on Twitter or anywhere else?
At Paul Doroshenko.
Okay. And your firm is Acumen Law?
Acumen Law. And phone number is 604-685-8889. If you're going to call to swear at me because you didn't like something you heard on the show, then do it during office hours.
What's a 24-hour I'm fucked phone number that they can call?
We have a 24-hour number, so there's always somebody answering the phone. And it's after usually a while, for emergencies, right?
Listen, after a while, even the Premier of Ontario, who was proud to say that anybody could call him at any time, disconnected his phone from getting the complaints. So there is a level at which point you'd say enough's enough. Dale Curd, first of all, really great to talk to you again. It's been a while since you and I passed each other talking as we shifted shows at what was then called CFRB 1010, Guy Talk. You have been a real great source of information here and analysis, and you've expressed it in a way that doesn't sound like Mr. Spock You know, a very human way for a therapist. None of us felt like we were on the couch. You can be seen on Hello Goodbye on CBC.
Absolutely. I think it's still in reruns, and I would encourage guys to check out the men's list, themenslist.com, because we write quite a bit about this. Got a great piece, actually, that sort of gets underneath the anger with Hugh Dillon that we published a little while
ago. Oh, Hugh. Okay, from the Headstones, now a successful actor.
Yeah, exactly. So, Steve, just out of curiosity, where do I actually send my invoice to all of you for the hour?
Oh, we'll talk about that after. themenslist.com, a very valuable resource that I don't think enough men know about. Now, if you've been listening to this show, you do. Go to themenslist.com. I think we need more websites dealing with men's issues that are not out there. Men's rights websites, which are
pushed forth by
insane.
Less that.
And
Rebel Media.
Yeah. Okay. And congratulations on your book with your wife Kimberly, "Living Lightly: Bring Happiness and Calm to Your Everyday," which I think there's probably advice in there that will cross over with what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve. It's been awesome. You're always on point.
No, thank you very much. And
I hope we get Dale back. This has been awesome.
Yeah, Dale, it's been great to have you. And we'll talk about that invoice. Okay, you should see Paul's. He's a lawyer.
Oh, jeez. Just wait till you get my bill.
Yeah, he's charging me for photocopying.
This is the cheapest hour you'll ever get with Dorshenko.
That's right. Okay, everybody, thank you very much. This has been Mensplaining. Please feel free to make comments. And when you do listen, if you enjoy the program, please put a 5-star review and put a comment there, a positive comment, because there are people out there who don't like either the moderate tilt of FU politics or don't like us cucks getting together to talk about being men. And they brigade, which is a term which means that they get together and they go to the podcast, and they put 1-star reviews, which is as low as you can get, and they put nasty comments. So if you want to help us, five-star review if you feel we've earned it, and a good comment if you feel we've earned it. And as far as earnings, to keep this thing going, to keep the lights on, and to keep the computers operating, patreon.com, you can become a patron. You can support us, support everything, all the dialogue that happens here on FU Politics. We've got Mensplaining. We also have Hey Ladies, which is the opposite sex talking about issues honestly amongst women, the way women honestly talk amongst women. There's so many great shows, and we want to bring you more, and we want to expand to FU Music to bring you that feeling of old school much music. But to do that, we need you to join us. FU is an attitude, but also stands for us and for you. So join us. Patreon.com subscriptions start at $1 a month. And it's Patreon, patreon.com/FU Network TV. Or if you don't want to get locked in once a month and you want to just give a one-time donation to give us a pat on the back, you can do that through PayPal. And our address there is funetworktv@gmail.com. I'm Stephen Kersner. And on FU Politics on Fun the FU Network. Thank you, and join us again next episode.
For he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow, for he's a jolly good fellow. Let's all say all the bus.
Hey, you hear that? No, listen. You hear that? That's right, there's nothing. And that's all there will be when you go looking for intelligent, sensible, rational dialogue on political issues that also have a sense of humor. That's if you don't support FU Politics. That's right. You can support this podcast. Go to patreon.com/FU Network TV. patreon.com/FU Network TV. Subscriptions start at $1 a month, or give us a one-time boost at PayPal. Our address is funetworktv@gmail.com. Otherwise, when you want to hear intelligent discourse about Canadian and international politics, all you're going to hear is this. Yep, dead silence. or a bunch of bozos and pundits yelling at each other, make the right choice. Subscribe today. I'm at the Sock, and I approve this message. If you don't like it, to hell with you. Now, here's your show.